the obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
Indeed we are. Welcome in on this Tuesday afternoon. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scrabies, Padres kick off a three-game set. Well, when I say here, I'm here in Toronto. Blue Jays, Padres, looking to get back into the winning lane after being swept by the Mariners. I guess the good news was fortunately the Dodgers also got swept at the hands of the Angels. Chris Ello, how are you, sir?
Looking forward to it, Tony. I know we have a short time together today, but it's a show so big that one country can't even contain it. We had to push ourselves north of the border for this one. And look, the Padres, you know, one of the keys to any successful season, you know this, I'll remind everybody else of this, is staying away from, you know, losing streaks, staying away from, you know, going into prolonged slumps. And so far this season, they've done a really good job, the Padres have. Every time there's been a hiccup or two, they bounced right back. I think after the three-game sweep here a month or so ago against the Rays, they went out and won 8 of their next 10 or 8 of 11, something like that. So, you know, hopefully this is the kind of thing you're looking for. Every season is going to have a three-game losing streak or two or three. There might even be a couple of fours or fives in there. You know, but the key is to keep them to a minimum. And, you know, I think that's kind of the job at hand tonight, or beginning tonight.
Yeah. No, and Dylan Cease is the guy that is going to be tasked with ending that streak. He's been really good his last four or five starts. We really start to see that come into focus over the last couple of starts. But the Padres need a big one from him today. And you know what else would be nice? To see the offense get going again. That Seattle Mariners series really had you feeling like it was like, what, circa 2023, when it just couldn't get the offense rolling. And some of that's credit to what the Mariners were able to do as a pitch staff. I know they didn't have their big guns, but the one thing I think the Mariners are starting to show is that they have figured out a way to produce some pitchers, especially starting pitchers. But it'd be nice to see the Padres kind of get back to it offensively. I thought obviously Luis swung the bat well in that series. I think Bogart swung the bat well in that last series, but everybody else was relatively quiet outside of Fernando's couples of I think his solo shot. Offense was pretty anemic at times in that series against the Mariners. So hopefully this is a good hitting ballpark. Ball seems to jump here. Hopefully they can kind of get back to it here tonight.
If people don't understand how crazy baseball is, all you have to do is see what Jackson Merrill's done since coming off the injured list, Tony. I mean, the first week that he was back, week and a half, he hit like 600. There was no way to get him out. He was getting three hits a game. You know, he was running the bases. He was making every catch in center field. And then just like that, he goes 1 for 21. Right. And and he's swinging at pitches that are nowhere near the strike zone. You're like, whoa. I mean, how did this happen? But, you know, this happens. So
it does.
You know, you have to fight your way through it. I think the one thing that frustrates me to a certain extent is that when they don't hit with runners in scoring position, and maybe this is just true of everybody, but when they don't hit with runners in scoring position, they don't score. And I think the combination is that plus the fact that they still haven't found that crooked number home run this year. I mean, they had the three-run shots in Colorado, but that's pretty much been it. So,
are you looking for?
Well, I'm looking for. I guess I am looking for a couple more three-run homers, a one big swing that can put three up there, and make up for having to get three hits with runners in scoring position. That's what I'm looking for. And you know, they right now they haven't found that. I think Manny, we've talked about it. I don't want to complain about Manny. People thought I was complaining about him yesterday. I wasn't. I'm just trying to say that three home runs from him is not going to get it done.
Sounds like a complaint.
Yeah, I know. I know it does. So there's no other way to say it, I guess. But, you know, I need some power from Manny, and he normally will give it to me. In fact, I'm sure he will. But until that happens, they need to rely on, you know, hitting with runners in scoring position. And it's crazy to go 0 for 21 in a series But that, I don't know, is that a product of bad hitting, bad execution, or just bad luck? I imagine it's a little of everything that happened in Seattle. I don't know.
I would say it's a product of probably a little bit of all those things.
Yeah.
You know, you go 0-for-21, it's going to be tough to win games, whether you're hitting homers or not. Padres had almost no problem putting up multiple runs and hits. And quite frankly, they got hits against Mariners. They had 7, 8, 9 hits against those guys. But ultimately, they weren't able to get those hits with runners in scoring position. So, you know, now you fast forward to yesterday. We're having conversations about homers today. Multiple having conversations about, you know, multi-runner homers, you know, 2-3 grand slams. And that's only because they went 0-for-21.
That's
so
true. That's it. You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
No.
You're not wrong. The stats do bear out the fact, though, that when they hit home runs with runners on base, they have hit a total this year of 13 home runs with a runner on base this year. 13. Only one of those has come in a game that they lost. All right, so the other 12 that they've hit have all come in games that they've won. So that suggests to me when they can get the two-run homer, the rare three-run homer, they win. And
okay, so if that suggests that to you, then what did the start of the season suggest to you when they went undefeated for the first however many days that didn't have homers in those?
It suggested to me that I, you know, I'm just grasping a little bit. I mean,
but
pitching was a little ridiculous at the beginning of the season, let's be honest. They didn't have to score
Touché.
A whole lot.
Listen, that's very true, and I'm just poking fun, but ultimately – They will, and they need to, hit a few more homers. But I don't think we should start focusing on the amount of homers. That's not why they lost those games to Seattle Mariners, because they didn't hit homers. They lost those games because they didn't get hits with runners in scoring position. And so, you know, I just am going to be careful before we start introducing the homer theory that, oh, that's why they are struggling is because they're not hitting homers. We've already seen that not be the case over the course of the season. I don't worry. At this point, if you are worried about Manny and him hitting homers, and I'm not talking about you, Chris, I'm just saying in general, you just haven't been paying a lot of attention to Manny Machado at all throughout the course of his career, because he gets his numbers. He always gets his numbers. That is something that he has done pretty consistently over the course of his career. You hope that this isn't like the first real trouble that Jackson Merrill is going to have. I mean, what'd you say, 1-for-21 or 0-for-21?
I think he went 1-for-21. He was 1-for-17 in the Seattle series and finished the Angels series 0-for-8. So,
and so, yeah, you hope that, you know, this dude has never, I can't think of, this feels like the longest streak he's ever had, honestly. I'm sure he's had one longer, but it's hard to remember him having any type of struggle. But
I know.
We're hoping that this isn't the time that he's about to start having one, but inevitably everyone has one at some point.
Yeah. And again, you know, when we're talking about the home runs, last thing on the home runs, because if Victor Rodriguez goes into the meeting before the season or this series with Toronto and says, guys, we've got to start hitting home runs, that's going to go against everything that they've been teaching this team for the last
Correct.
Couple of years, which is hit line
Correct.
Drives, hit gaps, let the homers happen when they happen. So you can't really change the message now. You have to go up and hit line drives because that's worked for you. It got you to the playoffs last year. It's got you in good position this year. So it's really neither here nor there to sit here, even though I'm doing it, and say, hey, we got to start hitting more home runs. Because that's really the last thing that you need to do when you want to hit a home run.
Well, it's the last thing they should be saying. Now,
right.
Certainly, hopefully the luck starts to turn their way where some of these balls start getting in the air and they turn into homers. That would be the ultimate goal of all of this. So, I don't know. The Padres, maybe I'm naive enough to think that this is just a small blip in the radar for the Padres this year. I don't think this is a sustained thing. Now, if this happens over the next, you know, this road trip too, then okay, maybe I have a little concern. But I just have seen too much evidence in terms of these guys, like, constantly getting back to it after something bad happens to have me think anything else is and when I say bad, they lose a series. They get swept.
Yeah.
It's they've too much evidence showing that these guys bounce back to think that they're just going to fold it up. Right.
They've
now.
Really only had the one really blip so far, and that was the, you know, 2 out of 3 at Houston, 2 out of 3 at Detroit, and then all 3 at Tampa Bay, or with Tampa Bay.
That's right.
But they came right back and went 8-3. So, you know, let's do something similar, that was, so, and everything we will often, be fine.
Let's remember what we often are telling people, because I even have to remind myself here.
Yeah.
It's a week-to-week thing. It was considered a bad week, just like that Detroit week was, right?
Yeah.
And then the following week started bad because they got swept by Tampa, but then they finished off the road trip right. And as you said, the next week they went 8-3, and so beginning of the week, let's see where the Padres go here in this week, and kind of make our assessments after the week again.
All right, Tony, I know you got to get down. Mike Schilt speaking. Go tell him everything I said, and
I'll
talk to you soon. All right, buddy, thanks.
Take care, fellas.
All right, Tony's on his way down to speak to the skipper. We have a very short show today, but I do have a lot of things. That's the Padres stuff. There's a ton of different stuff that I want to get to today.
What's more important than the Padres and Manny Machado not hitting home runs?
Because we already went over it for 2 straight days, and I'm done with it.
I know. I got so many DMs last night. It boggles my mind how many people think that the Padres are telling us what to say. Oh. Like, I'm a conspiracy theorist, but when the source of the conspiracy says they're not telling us what to say, I promise you, I would believe it. But nobody believes us. We're just a shell.
Like I said, when they lose 3 in a row, I don't get paid. So, because I've had nothing nice to say the last couple of days. When we come back, a whole bunch of different directions, and I'm really saddened by something I just found out within the last 45 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
One of my favorite actors in the history of the world has passed away. I have to take a moment to pay tribute. And then the rest of the sports day on 97.3 The Fan.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 2:17 is the time. Go only have a short time together today. 3 o'clock, we'll turn it over to Sam Levitz. Padre pregame show, Padres and the Blue Jays from north of the border tonight. Chris Bassett for Toronto. And who's Dylan Cease. Yeah, Dylan. Dylan's back on the mound for the Friars tonight. Dodgers again lost, right, last night. And the Giants also lost. So it was a good night, even though we didn't suit them up. Dodgers are just a half game up now on the Padres heading into play today. I'll talk about the Dodgers' concerns in a moment. But I mentioned this going out. One of the things that made me smile every single time that I watched television in the 1990s, and whenever I see a rerun, it still makes me smile now. And just thinking about it makes me smile. Was when the character Norm Peterson would walk into the bar at Cheers, and he would come in and he would say, "Good evening, everybody," or "Good afternoon, everybody." And they'd always yell, "Norm!" And everybody in the bar would yell that. You don't know that reference at all, right, Scraby? Like, that doesn't ring a bell to you?
I've somewhat.
A little bit.
Somewhat.
Okay.
My parents definitely watched Cheers. Right. I remember Cheers being on.
There's nobody that you know was around in the 90s that didn't watch Cheers.
And I know this.
Yeah, it's a great theme song. But whenever he walked in, they'd say, "Norm!" And, you know, he would always say some joke and then sit down. And he was in every episode of Cheers. The actor's name was George Wendt, and he passed away today at the age of 76. I feel a little like a little piece died there.
Really?
Yes, Norm was that big in my time. And, I mean, that show was huge, but he was the character that I think a lot of us kind of really enjoy.
I'm trying to think
of... He was the guy just sitting on the end of the bar there drinking a beer.
Can I ask a question that is not meant to be a hater question, but was that show just about a bunch of alcoholics at a bar?
No, it was owner of the bar, Sam Malone, was a former baseball player. And
I did know that.
And a former alcoholic. That he was a former alcoholic.
He bought a bar?
Bought a bar. That's right.
I actually went to the Cheers bar one of the times I was in Boston.
Now, Cheers is an incredible show. Yeah. It has nothing to do with anybody getting drunk at all.
Interesting.
All right. Anyway, Norm was is my favorite character. Maybe like in all of TVs, right up there with like somebody more recent vintage, Walter White on Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Although he's a drama character. George Wendt, man, was classic as Norm. He got nominated for the Emmy 6 years in a row from 1989 to 1995. He never won it. But anyway, he passed away today at the age of 76, and I'm really sad by that. Some of you may also remember George Wendt, the actor, from Saturday Night Live. He was the Chicago superfan. Do you ever see that episode? You never saw that stuff either?
No.
You know, when they would go, "Duh, Bears."
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard that for sure.
Well, he was the guy. That
he was
him.
The Duh, Bears guy.
He was the main guy. The host of that little gathering of actors.
I definitely remember who he is, and I definitely know what he's done.
He's a piece of me. I really feel that. And
I heard piece of meat, but it was piece of me.
No, it just feels like a little piece of me passed on today. Cheers was a place, like the song says, where everybody goes to knows your name. And I think we all either had a place like that in our lives or wish we had a place like that in our lives, where you walked in and everybody knew you and welcomed you.
I never had a bar like that.
You weren't at one long enough to get that kind of relationship.
Here's a real story. I used to go to the same liquor store all the time until I got embarrassed that I was going back multiple times a day. So okay. I had to start frequenting all of the liquor stores in the area when I was a alcoholic.
I think one of the funnier things about Norm, I'm reading the story today, the actor George Wendt, because, he always had his beer going down at the end of the bar, but it wasn't about that. But the actual beer was obviously non-alcoholic. It wasn't a real beer. And he said he hated that. He hated the concoction that they made.
Yeah.
That he had to. He said the hardest part of his job on Cheers for 11 years was drinking the beer that we all thought he lived for.
I can imagine
his character did on the show.
Very gross.
It was pretty sad, he said. All right, I'm sad, and I want to share, and I'm sure there's many others from my era that feel
really
similar to
nice
Norm passing today.
Comment about this. Melvin says, in a way, this show is like the Cheers bar. Thanks, guys, for doing this show and building this community between us fans.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah.
That's very cool. What was his name?
Melvin.
I have one thing to say for you. Melvin!
Okay. Melvin!
Bringing you in, Melvin.
Maybe that's how we need to start saying hi to people.
That's right. We all just yell out their name. All right. It's hard to make a transition from that.
What's a buffalo theory? It says Norm's buffalo theory is classic.
Oh. Not coming, back to me right now.
Okay, but we'll look into it.
Over 11 seasons and, 150 episodes.
We'll look into it.
Yeah, that one I don't have off the top of my head, but I have a lot of Norm stuff, not that one. The Dodgers lost last night. And here's what I liked about it, Scrabe. Not only they lost. That's good. We need that. But after they played terrible. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights of the game. Hyesung Kim was out in center field.
Did not see he was in center field.
Desperate Dodgers put him out in center field. And somebody on the, who'd they play last night? Arizona.
Yep.
Somebody had a lazy pop fly to right center field. Hyesung Kim came running in and like a little leaguer, watched as the ball landed 25 feet away from him over in right center field. Scrappy, he couldn't have reached it with a 20-foot pole. He wasn't close to it.
What was he looking at?
I don't know. It's one of the most embarrassing plays I've seen a major league player make. Max Muncy had his, typical defensive flaw or two. I think it was Landon Knack or whoever started was beat up pretty good early, and they got blown out.
Knack
four
came
straight
in
loss.
Second.
Okay, so whoever before him. So four straight loss for the Dodgers. After the game, I love this, Scraby. I love this. After the game, Dodgers basically said, hey, we got a lot of injuries right now. We got a lot of issues. We got a lot of people out. We're making do with what we have. Oh, really? So you want us to feel sorry for you because you're doing the best you can under the circumstances. Is that it, Dodgers?
Yeah, yeah.
I see. They still have a roster and a playing active roster that includes how many $25 million plus players?
A lot.
Otani, Betts, Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy, Tommy Edman,
Will Smith.
Will Smith. They're all still in the lineup. I mean, the last team that anybody out there in baseball thinks should ever be able to say, hey, we're doing the best we can under the circumstances, is the Dodgers.
Yeah, you can't
say that.
There
is nobody's going to feel sorry for them.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
No.
And so,
hey, I got an idea,
I just
Dodgers.
Got a kick out of that one.
I got an idea. I know you can't really predict injuries, but why don't you go out and like spend your money wisely on players so you have multiple options in case something happens?
Well, they would have a little extra money if they didn't give a lot of it to Blake Snell and to Tyler Glass now and to, you know, some of these guys. But, hey, and they make what they make, and there's nobody going to feel sorry for the Dodgers.
No.
I mean, you got to be kidding me telling me, you know, we're making do with what we have. Really. Even Miguel Rojas makes $5 million a year, and they're about to cut him in the wake of cutting Chris Taylor and Austin Barnes.
By the way, Chris Taylor popped up a lot in my DMs last night. My answer,
oh, is the guy that the Padres should get?
My answer is no.
Is he hitting over 100?
I didn't even look at his stats. I just knew that he was older, and Chris Taylor has killed the Padres forever.
All right, we'll go where you want us
He's
to go.
He's 200.
Yeah, when we come back, we'll take a look at the Padres' weak left field situation and tell you who's playing there tonight as they go into Toronto. I have a few other things to get to, a little potpourri of stuff before we end the show. It's Chris Ello, it's Matt Scraby, Tony in Toronto, and it's Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, just letting it sink in.
Putting away your Spiros stuff?
Yeah, what that guy just said there a minute ago about Spiros, man, that was really good.
I don't really like that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty annoying.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, he's annoying. all right, welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. We got about half an hour, Scrape, before we turn it
yeah,
over to Sam?
Yeah.
All right, I got a potpourri. I got a bunch of stuff. Let's start with left field for the Padres.
All right.
And what we're going to do.
Let me get some music.
Okay. Potpourri music?
Yeah, potpourri music. Which,
what do you have for that?
I don't know.
Probably similar to every other music you have.
If I'm taking a wild guess here.
All right. Potpourri music.
This doesn't strike me as
Not
potpourri
really.
Music. Okay.
Jason Hayward is the answer to the trivia question, who will be in left field tonight. He's batting eighth. Martin Maldonado's batting ninth. And I know this won't decide the game, but I think all of us agree that having two automatic outs at the bottom of the order is not really what we want.
I personally enjoy watching guys
just automatically
out.
Get out yes. so that Fernando comes up with two outs and the bases
exactly,
empty.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they can get a hit here and there, but nobody's expecting, you know, any contribution there.
Someone actually did, because we have a lot of new baseball fans that listen, and they asked me what an automatic out meant, because they assumed
that the umpire just automatically calls you out?
Yeah, an automatic out is like a jerky way of saying they can't hit.
It's a jerky way of saying that we kind of expect these two guys to get out every time they're up.
Yeah.
And we'd love for that to change. Catching, I don't think it's going to change, because I think they hate Camposano. It's clear to me they brought him up. I'm not even sure why they even brought him up at all. They gave him 8 swings of the bat, and they got rid of him, and I think they ought to trade him and try to get something for him, because they hate him. They're going to go with Maldonado. They're going to go with Diaz, and unfortunately, neither guy's going to give you much. Diaz played all 3 games this weekend, by the way.
He did.
And you saw how that jump-started the offense. Not too much. As far as Hayward's concerned, this is what we expected, is it not? I hate to say it like that, but the guy's been in decline for 3 years, 4 years. It was going to take something really surprising for him to just all of a sudden start hitting 280 and knocking the ball all over the yard.
Yeah, I don't understand why people are expecting different things.
Really,
because before the year, what we said about Jason Hayward, plays good defense, needs to find a way to
good,
hit.
Good clubhouse guy, good leader, teammate, everything. He's all those things. So anyway, last night, unfortunately for you and I, Taylor Ward of the Angels homered for the third consecutive game. So now, he is the guy that we absolutely, positively have to get.
Well, I was called an idiot last week for
bringing
that up.
Oh, well, now everybody's an idiot, I guess. All right, Taylor Ward does have 13 homers, which is enticing.
He does.
That's 10 more than Manny. That's kind of a sobering way to look at it, I know. But he also is hitting 198. And 198 is the high watermark for him. He was at 174 a week and a half ago. So he's in the middle of a hot streak. He's homered in five of his last seven games. So he is kind of the flavor of the moment. He also costs about $8 million, and you get him for a year and a half.
Before,
and then he's a free agent. He's also 31 years old. Not a young guy.
Yeah.
He's never really hit higher than 240, so 190 isn't that far off of what he normally does. He also strikes out a hell of a lot, more than once per game over the last couple of years. The bottom line is, even if you want, even if you say, okay, I'm going to listen to Joe and La Mesa and Vince and, you know, Temecula, and I don't mean to call anybody out by name, but you know what I mean.
Vince and Temecula's like, what did I do?
What did I do, right. But all the listeners, even when I listen to all the listeners, I'm AJ, I'm driving around, I'm listening to all you listeners, and you say, go get Taylor Ward, doesn't mean that I can find a deal that the Angels are going to want. I think it's kind of funny to me that a lot of us fans feel like the Padres are the only team in the league. So whatever we need, the other teams will just acquiesce and give that to us.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen that way. So even if Taylor Ward is the perfect guy, and I really don't think
he is. I would think the Angels want more than what the Padres
are going to pay. I would think the Angels are going to want a little something for him. Yeah, they're not just going to give him to us.
And by the way, are you willing, I guess, Chris, are you willing to see a bunch of strikeouts for the occasional home run?
The occasional home run. I mean, prior to last week, the guy had 8 homers and 17 RBIs and was hitting 172. That's not what you would have wanted for the first month and a half of the season.
No.
What happened the last week? Be great. All right. That's Taylor Ward.
I
think that's enough on him. If we go ahead. But, if, you know, if that's who they want, okay. But it's not, just even if they want it, doesn't mean they can get it.
I think I think, and I'm included, we are too focused on the brand names. We need to be going to names that are major leaguers that can fill a purpose. Like, I get a lot of Luis Robert Jr. I think Luis Robert Jr. is one of the most overrated players in baseball because all he does is not hit anymore.
Who's this?
Luis Robert Jr. from the White Sox. This year, he's hitting 186. He has 5 home runs. His OPS is 589. Last year, 224, OPS 657, 14 home runs. He's had one really, really good year in his career. One.
Yeah, and he's going to cost an arm and a leg. It just does makes no sense. Scraby wants you to keep an eye on the Toronto left fielder tonight. His name is Nathan Lukes. It's spelled L-U-K-E-S, so it looks like it's Lukes. But it's actually pronounced Lukes.
Yes.
Nathan Lukes. He is 30.
Just started his major league time clock, so he's way at the beginning of
He's at the beginning of contract stuff. He did hit 303 last year in 76 at-bats. He's got 4 career home runs.
We don't need him for home runs.
What do we need him for?
Defense. And at least hitting 250.
He's hitting 247 right now.
There you go, 250.
Okay. Anyway.
I think the reason I brought him up is because his price is attainable.
It's not a terrible thing to bring him up. It's just, I mean, I don't want Hayward in there now either right now. I don't. Believe me, it's driving me crazy. But you got to give me a reasonable alternative, and I got to be able to pay for that alternative, not only salary-wise, but the collateral is going to be to make a deal possible.
Yeah, see, we don't know.
And I don't think the people out there don't consider the collateral. The listeners, you people, you just think, well, we want this guy, so all we have to do is call and go, hey, we're interested in Taylor Ward, and the Angels will find a way to make it happen.
And they're going to take some of the best prospects in the Padres system. And same with Luis Robert Jr. You think that they're going to give him away for a bunch of scrubs? No.
All right. Now, one guy that's playing left field right now in the major leagues that is having a phenomenally good breakout season.
Stowers?
No. Is James Wood.
Well,
we're not going to get James Wood, but I bring him up because we had James Wood. And now in the world of, oops, maybe we shouldn't have done that.
Oops, I did it again.
People are saying, oh my goodness, we gave away way too much to get Juan Soto for a year, etc. And of course, Soto came and he went. And now we have what we have.
Mm-hmm.
We have Dylan Cease, basically, and Michael King in exchange, basically, for James Wood, C.J. Abrams, and Mackenzie Gore.
Yeah.
Is it the worst trade in the history of baseball? No. But James Wood is making it a little tougher to stomach this year. He's got 12 homers. He's hitting .279. He's got a .908 OPS. He looks like he's going to be a hell of a player.
Did you
look great in left field right now.
Yes.
So it's painful to see him doing these things.
Did you, I'm sorry, I was reading something. Did you mention that Bobby Barrels, Robert Hassel, has not cracked the major league roster yet?
I didn't even
yet?
Mention that.
And he was a big part of that trade.
Yeah, but he's not.
Exactly.
Now, like I said, he's not. Luke Voit isn't either. The trade is basically what I said it was. Wood, Gore, Abrams there. We ended up with basically Soto, which turned into Cease and King.
Yes.
So that's the trade.
Yes.
But I bring James Wood up because Juan Soto is... It's making it so easy for me to be critical of him that I almost don't want to take advantage of the opportunity. You know
now
what I'm getting
time.
At?
Now is the time.
I'm not going to. Look, yesterday we told you everything we needed to about Juan Soto. The guy is a diva. The guy is what he is. The New York media, fans, players, teammates, coaches, they're all finding out about it now.
Mm-hmm.
They all seem surprised by it. And the stories are starting to pop out that Soto isn't interested, that he's not a team guy. All of these things that we already knew. And then last night, he tops it off by hitting a fly ball off the Green Monster at Fenway Park and watching it sail and watching it and watching it. He's actually lucky he didn't get thrown out at first base. I mean, he barely ran at all. After the game, he was asked about it. I can't believe, well, maybe I can. He was asked about his lack of hustle, or he said if he needed to hustle more. And Scrabe, he said, yeah, I hustle.
Yeah.
And the reporters were like incredulous. Like, what?
They were.
Like, are you looking at the same thing we are? So that was Soto's way of dealing with it. The manager of the Mets, Carlos Mendoza, as nice as he could, said, we're going to have a talk about it.
I have it. If you want to hear Carlos Mendoza.
That's fine. That's basically what he said. I don't need to hear. Okay. I'm not trying to, you know, I appreciate you having it, but
it doesn't
basically
sound like
what he's, I know. Basically what he said is, you know, we'll have a talk about it. That's fine. But the fact that a guy could make the major leagues and make over $70 million? $750 million. And have to be brought in for a talk. Because he doesn't hustle and try and play the game the right way. I don't know if that's a bigger indictment on the Mets for their stupidity of not looking it up or just on the player himself. But either way, I thank Juan Soto because I imagine in the time that he was here, I felt like I was in the minority of people who constantly said I was not a fan. Because he puts up big numbers. Chris, do you see what he does? And I see what he doesn't do. But I think everyone loved Juan Soto, hated to lose him. Addition by subtraction. I'm sorry, there's just no other way I can put it. He may very well carry the Mets to the World Series. Maybe you give him credit for carrying the Yankees there last year. I don't know. But to me, he's always going to be a selfish, play-for-me type of individual. And that's just not who I want on my club.
No, and if you... The one thing with me is if you need to be motivated after signing the biggest contract in Major League history, then there is something wrong with you. Like, you are the problem. Because all of a sudden, because you're not hustling, you're kind of angry at the media for even asking. Come on, Juan Soto.
Yeah.
You weren't hustling. Don't lie to us. Like, if that's your hustle, I've seen you run harder. I've definitely seen you run harder, Juan Soto.
You know, of all the stories that have come out in the last week, the one that bothers me the most is him standing there with the media and walking off and telling one of the team spokespeople to tell the media people he'd be right back and then just never coming back.
Yeah.
To me, that is all I need to know about a person I don't want to be around. All right, let's move on to the next thing. I'm getting a little nervous, Scraby. I'm getting a little nervous. This is a potpourri segment, by the way. We're getting everything in before the end of the show. I don't know when the vote results are going to come in. But the tush push is lingering and hanging in the process, or in the balance right now.
It sure is.
The NFL owners have already voted to allow the players to play flag football at the 2028 Olympics.
Yes.
That came down, I want to say, at 7 o'clock this morning.
It came down early.
Right? It is now 6 hours after this, and we don't have a resolution yet on the tush push. And we also don't have a resolution on something I feel is even more important, and that is the Detroit Lions' proposal to reseed the playoff teams and basically take away the importance of ever winning your division. So I'm a little nervous about this. I don't. The tush push, I can live without it, although I think it's I just think it's bad to outlaw something that one team figured out how to do and the rest can't do.
It's unsafe, Chris. That's why I want it gone.
Apparently so, yes, I'm sure. Well, if you took away everything that's unsafe, then you wouldn't play the NFL anymore.
It's true.
Basically.
It's true.
Right? But I'm really nervous about this playoff reseeding thing. I think it's going to be a big disaster to overreact to the fact that the Vikings could have been a higher seed last year had they done away with the divisions.
I really don't know why the Lions are doing it. The Lions are standing up for their own division, mate.
I love the divisions. The rivalry. There's a little rivalry left in division play. You know, if you, by this proposal, by reseeding the playoff teams, conceivably, right? If all four teams in the, let's say, NFC South go 8-9, none of them would make the playoffs. I just don't think that's the way it should be.
I
think
agree.
If you win your division, you get into the playoffs. That's what divisions are for.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I really hope the owners stick up for that, but neither has been decided yet, Scrape, and I don't know when they're planning to announce this, but it hadn't happened yet.
I would assume we're going to hear about it either by tonight or tomorrow.
Do you think they're having this long of a discussion, or they just have a 3-martini lunch somewhere?
I think these are very important discussions they're really trying to work through.
Yeah, okay.
Because playoff seeding is probably the most important here.
I think it is.
Because you're changing the fabric of the NFL.
I think you are.
They changed it once when they added an extra wild card team, and they only gave one team a bye, which I agreed with.
Yeah.
But you can't change it again just because one team got seeded incorrectly.
The Vikings weren't even complaining. They were 14-3, and they had to go on the road. It does happen sometimes.
Yeah.
Where the second-best team is in the same division. But it's okay. Like, I don't have a problem with that. If you're good, go win your game and move on to the next week.
Agree.
And the Vikings got basically, you know, pointed out as a fraud. The Rams blew them out. No, they didn't look like they deserved a 14-3 anyway.
No.
So that's how that worked. I hope the NFL doesn't overreact to that.
Can I give you some insight onto the flag football?
Sure.
So I guess a limit of one player on each national team participating.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Here's some of the breakdowns. Permission for any player under NFL contract to participate in tryouts. So if you're under a contract, you can try out. Again, one player per NFL team per nation. In addition, a team's designated international player can play for his home country. So if you're from another country and someone else from your team is already on a flag football team, you could be on that other country's team. So I know that there's someone from I think it's in Africa somewhere. Maybe the Congo. I don't even want to say. But they can, if someone from their team is already playing the flag football, then they can go represent their country.
Well, they're going to have to make some sort of rules to make these other teams somewhat legit.
Yes.
Because if all the Americans played for the American team, it's just hard for me to believe that, you know.
Well, only one per team.
Not trying to pick on the Netherlands, but just came to mind. You know, is the Netherlands flag football going to really compete with Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill? And people like that?
If they do, sign them immediately.
Yeah.
A purchase of league-wide insurance policies is going to be in play because they want to protect against injuries. A salary cap credit is going to happen for any player who is injured. And an expectation that Olympic flag football teams will establish medical staffs and field services that comply with NFL minimum standards.
Okay.
So basically, the NFL is like, hey, if you want us to be a part of this, you do what we say. Which is annoying to me.
All right. I got one last thing, and then we got just enough time for it. NBA playoffs back in action tonight. Game one of the Western Conference Finals tonight. It'll be Minnesota and OKC. I hate to make it this simple, but honestly, the winner of the game tonight will be the team that shoots better from the three-point line, and that'll be the winner of the series. And the same will be true, I think, unfortunately, for the Knicks-Pacers series, which starts tomorrow. In the last round, the team that made more threes won 18 and lost 5. So it's almost a guarantee if you make more threes, you're going to win. And the shooting percentages are like 40% to 29%. Winners versus losers. I'm just hoping that the Celtics being out of it and somebody else being able to win the championship this year will help begin the movement to change the isolation offense that bores everybody to tears. Don't know if it'll happen, but I'm hopeful.
Did you see that they want all the teams to wear their original uniforms? Like, no, none of the new uniforms?
Tonight?
Like, they want the throughout the playoffs.
Throughout the playoffs? They want the Pacers to wear their old ABA unis?
They want them to wear, like, their official uniforms instead of wearing City Connects or whatever.
I see what you mean.
Because I got to say, the Pacers might be my least favorite logo in the NBA.
All right.
Do you agree?
I don't know. No, I don't have a least favorite. I don't know. I've kind of accepted the uniform shuffle, but I've been through this before. I wish they would just go back to home teams wearing white and visiting team wearing some, you know, dark jersey, but that seems to be long gone by now. The Knicks-Pacers will be interesting. I like the Pacers in that series as much as I think Brunson is unstoppable down the stretch. I think the Pacers have more good players playing well right now. I don't know if I love Minnesota to beat OKC, but I'll root for them. That's about my prognostication on the playoff.
Why?
I like Ant-Man better.
Okay, that's fair enough.
It's kind of, you know, I like that team. I like McDaniels. I like Conley. I like Minnesota.
I think they have a problem on their hands, though.
Which is?
If the Pacers make the finals, no one's watching. If the Knicks make the finals,
it'll be bigger.
It'll be bigger.
Yeah, I don't think the Minnesota-OKC series, neither is going to bring a lot of eyeballs.
No. But Minnesota maybe more than OKC.
And let's just say this, ahead of time, if the Knicks beat the Pacers, somebody somewhere, probably you, will say that it was fixed so that the Knicks could get in.
I won't say
just
that.
Just prepare for it.
I won't say that.
It's going to happen, though.
Well, the Knicks have been a pretty good team this year.
Yeah, they might win. Anyway,
I only grew up in an era where the Knicks were good with, you know, Patrick Ewing and all those guys. That's the only era I grew up in.
They've not been to the finals since then. The Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese controversy drags onward. I think we hit it from all sides yesterday. I think both of them were at fault. I think Clark is a bit of a cheap shot player. Whether you think she was on that play or not is for debate, but there's a ton of other video of her out there that reminds me why I think she's a bit of a cheap shot player. Angel Reese, it doesn't react in a way that I enjoy either.
You're not calling out the part where Angel Reese pushed Caitlin Clark's teammate in the back out of the way.
Yeah, and that's maybe
why Caitlin Clark went after the ball the way she did. You know what she said after the game? It was a basketball play. Let's move on. And that's exactly
what
it was.
Angel Reese?
Caitlin Clark.
No, that's what Angel Reese said. Angel Reese said they got it right. Let's move on.
Okay.
Angel Reese pushing the player in the back happens on every rebound in the history of basketball. And sometimes it's called and sometimes it's not. To me, that was part of the actual play in the game. Angel Reese got away with that push and got the rebound because of it. That's on the officials to catch that. They missed it. Caitlin Clark's play was, to me, borderline over the top. And I think it deserved a reaction, and it got one.
I'm surprised by this take. I know you really are.
I know you are.
Because all she did was go for the ball and try...
And shove her down.
Shove her down!
Okay, then why was she on the floor?
Because she flopped.
Oh, okay.
You don't see the flop?
I'm going to have to show you a bunch of other Caitlin Clark crap that she's pulled over the years. She has a pretty good reputation of doing this, so this doesn't surprise me that she did it again. And I've seen a lot of basketball and non-basketball plays like that in my career refereeing, and I would have judged that to be a flagrant foul, unnecessary contact. That's what I would have judged. It's my opinion. You have yours. I have mine. It's really neither here nor there, because the bottom line is what you and I arrived at yesterday, and that is that the WNBA is walking a slippery slope here. All they're doing, whether they know it or not, is promoting a rivalry between Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese. The eyes on that telecast the other day was a world record for WNBA basketball, right? Biggest crowd or biggest viewing audience ever. It's all great. But because all of the eyeballs are only on Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, the rest of us, missing what is going on around the rest of the league, which is a lot of darn good basketball. So they've got to figure out a way to balance the two.
They do, because as a guy who's trying to watch WNBA...
Do you even know there's anything else happening in the league?
Of course I know there's other games, but I don't care.
Right. Because that's the only thing that... And I
watched Paige Beckers a little bit last night because she's a high draft pick.
Yes, you want to see what she's looking like out there.
She got 20 points last night, wasn't
it? She had 19. She had a pretty good game. Okay. But yeah, it's... they got to be careful. It's a balancing act. Because Reese and Clark are your meal ticket. But you can't forget about the rest of these players and the rest of these teams and these kids and what they're all doing.
But they're not as good. Like, that's the problem.
I think many of them are much better than Clark and Reese.
You think that many of them are better than...
I don't know that Caitlin Clark is the best player in the league. And I know for a fact Angel Reese isn't the best player in the league. She can't make a one-foot shot.
Oh, you know what I heard last night that was, I'm glad I remember this, because they were talking about the foul, and one of the guys on the show said she was just trying to get her to the line, and she missed both free throws.
Right.
So I don't understand why people are so up in arms over this. This isn't much ado about nothing.
I'm not going to defend my reasoning for calling a flagrant foul again. I've done it as many times as I can do it. One last thing. How much time do we have?
Two minutes.
Does anybody out there yet know if the Padres are going to extend their streak tonight? What streak am I talking about, Scrape?
Runners in scoring position?
No.
Oh.
Talking about something far more important. Padres have worn the road pinstripe uniforms the last 11 road games. When are the Brown Unis ever coming back, or are they ever coming back?
These are things that I really don't care about. I know you do. I know you're a big fan of this stuff.
I know that people bought the Brown uniform, and a lot of people wear it and like it, but this team doesn't want to wear them anymore.
Because it's bad luck.
They are 1-3. They've only worn the Brown Unis 4 times all year. They've worn the pinstripes 11 straight games on the road. The last time they wore the road brown was, it's almost the 1 month anniversary of the last time we saw the Brown Unis. Something to keep an eye on tonight. Maybe Sam Levitt will know ahead of time.
Something to keep an eye on.
Or maybe somebody's got some video, some sneaky video that I don't have yet of the Padres warming up in Toronto and could tell us what unis they're going to wear.
I mean,
Dave Marcus probably knows. He's sitting there.
Let me ask him.
Yeah, see if he knows what uni. Does he know if the Padres are wearing the brown? I don't know if he would know. It's, what are they, 2 hours before the game? No, just an hour.
Dave's not listening.
Dave's not there at the moment. Yeah. All right. Well, so Samuel, I'll tell Sam to fill everybody in on that.
Oh, he's, Sam's going to get right on that.
I'm sure he will. You know, what, whenever Sammy comes in here for the pregame show, I always give him a bunch of things that I'm thinking about, and he just dismisses them all immediately. He's like, yeah, okay, whatever. I got other things.
Except for the left-handed pitching staff from last year.
He liked that one last year.
Yeah.
All right. Padres hit a home run with a runner on base. They've only lost one game this year when that's happened. Look for that tonight. Give me a couple of crooked numbers. Let's get back in the win column. Scrape, you can tell everybody tomorrow where I've gone for a few days, but I'm taking a couple off.
Okay.
Scrape, you'll be back with Tony tomorrow. I'll miss all of you, but it won't be long.
You make it sound so mysterious.
I got one last thing.
Hurry up.
Norm!
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.